Welcome to The Roofer Show with your host, Dave Sullivan. You found the podcast that helps roofing contractors grow their businesses, make more money, and have more free time. Each week, Dave interviews the industry's top experts who will give you actionable tips and strategies for the real world of construction to help you take your roofing business to the next level. So let's get down to business.
Hey everybody, what's up? And welcome to The Roofer Show, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I'm your host, Dave Sullivan, and I've been a successful roofing contractor and NRCA member for over 30 years, and I'm here to share with you what I've learned. You can get more tips, strategies, and free downloads by going to my website at theroofershow.com. You can sign up for the newsletter, get some great tips, the best of the best, where we just cut to the chase and give you the tips that you need to improve your roofing business. If you've been getting value from the 70 episodes of The Roofer Show, I would really appreciate it if you could leave me an iTunes review. Really helps get the show out, and it's easy to do. Just go down below the show notes. There's a big box that says leave review, gives you simple instructions, walks you through it step by step. And I would really appreciate it. Today, I've got a great interview with Alex Barthet, and we are going to talk about how to get paid on these jobs. Everybody's so busy. They're just scrambling. And you do not want to forget to get your bills out. And there are a lot of problems where you can run into where payments are delayed. You've got so much money going out and not enough money coming in. You're going to have a real cash crunch. And that's a problem that we see when everybody's booming, they're busy, and it's something that can really cause you a world of hurt. So we're going to get into that today because Alex is a board-certified construction attorney in Florida. He's got a BS in mechanical engineering. He manages the Barthet firm, and that's a 10-lawyer construction law firm in Miami. And he's got a great podcast called The Lean Zone and a great blog, great information. He's got videos at theleanzone.com. And I've been following for a long time and trying to get him on the show. And finally, we were able to connect. And he's got some great information on how to get paid. But before we get into the interview, I want to thank our sponsor, Ruby Receptionists. They provide a great service for contractors. And if you're going to grow a profitable business, you're going to have to make a great first impression. Otherwise, they're gone. And that first impression is going to start with that first phone call. And if you're sending that first call to voicemail or one of those crappy answering services like my doctor has, they're not going to leave a message. They're just going to go to your competitor where they can get a live person. And that's where Ruby Receptionists come in. Ruby will answer 100% of your calls live, transfer only the ones you want to receive. They'll take messages. They'll address common questions, just like an in-house receptionist, but at a fraction of the cost. Ruby gives you the peace of mind to step away from the phone and focus on the activities that are really making you money. I really think it's a no-brainer. You do the math, you sell one more job from this service, it more than pays for itself. And this is how you're going to build a quality long-term reputation. But if you want to experience Ruby for yourself, just go to callruby.com/roofershow and you can go for a test drive. You set up a sample greeting. They'll email you a temporary number to call and you can make as many test calls as you want within an hour's window. And you'll save $50 on your first full month's service by using the promo code ROOFER50. And that's callruby.com/roofershow, or you can call them at 844-326-7829. Start making that great first impression today. All right, well, let's get into our interview with Alex Barthet and find out how we can get paid, because that check is not in the mail. Alex, thanks for coming on to the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
Hey, today I want to talk about getting paid as a contractor because we are all so busy. We're doing so much work. And it seems to be an area where sometimes contractors just forget. They don't get their bills out. They don't go after collections. They don't get the money. And the next thing you know, you get so much money going out. We don't have any money coming in, and we get into a big cash crunch. But before we get into that, can you give us a little background, Alex, on where you came from and a little about your firm?
Sure. Again, my name is Alex Barthet. I am a construction attorney in South Florida. Been practicing for about 20 years. I have a mechanical engineering degree and board certified in construction. I manage a firm that my father started about 25 years ago. We have 11 lawyers, and all we do is construction. We only represent those folks involved in construction, whether it's owners, developers, roofers, contractors, electricians, architects, and engineers. And we usually help them with a few things, many of which we're going to go over today. Contracts, payment disputes, liens and bond claims, and other types of contract disputes or defective work claims that may come after a job. Miami's booming, so we always seem to be busy here and dealing with lots of the same issues that you've mentioned at the intro.
Well, you're coming up on a year, I think, on Hurricane Irma, aren't you?
Yep, coming very close. I think a few more months and it'll be a year.
Good. So what was that like?
Well, the mass evacuation of the state of Florida South Florida was interesting. We got out, my family and I got out about 6 hours before it became near gridlock on the expressways. It's significantly changed. So once everyone came back and kind of assessed the damage, it's only made the tight construction market down here even tighter. I'll tell you a story. We had a client who tidied up their building before the hurricane, got everything locked down, including some rental equipment that they had on the site. Everything was fine after the hurricane. And then there was some downtime for about a month where they could return the equipment. And the equipment rental company said, look, we will take it back. But just know that if you give us this piece of equipment, it's going straight to the Keys and you won't get it for 6 months.
Right.
So just be aware, at which point my client said, well, I guess it's sitting here and we'll pay the extra month for it. But we've seen that happen with rental equipment, with people, personnel, companies, and it's only now starting to get better because almost all of the work related to the cleanup and rebuilding has kind of the initial push. That's kind of over with now. But, there's still a lot of construction happening related to Irma, plus everything else that was happening here.
Well, it's crazy. We have, I'm in Northern California, and we had the big fires. And same situation. Everybody was booked up to begin with, and then they've got this. There's nobody to do the work. There's nobody to rebuild this these houses.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And, it's a market that's only getting tighter, which means that, you probably have to pay people more, which means you need to make sure you collect your accounts receivable so that you have the money to pay people.
Yeah. Well, there must be a huge problem down there where you did have all these delays. You're in the middle of projects. And since that time, material prices have skyrocketed. You've had all this downtime. You've had all this cost to contractors. That must be a huge problem. As far as trying to collect this money, do you see a lot of problems there that contractors are having?
Well, the contractors that were best prepared for it, I have found, were the ones that had gone through similar issues and prepared themselves both from their own business cash perspective, but at the same time with what they have as provisions in their construction contract. So it is common to have here in South Florida provision in your contract for time extensions related to hurricanes. Typically, either a hurricane watch or warning hits pause on your construction contract. But you have to know to put that in, because an owner or a GC if you're a sub, isn't going to want you to have that. So you need to know to put it in. But the more sophisticated contractors know about it and had that. So most people got anywhere from depending on how their contract was written, 7 to 15 days as a pass on their construction contracts. But as far as collecting actual money, yeah, it was a big hiccup. It definitely delayed funding on jobs. It reduced how much you could draw on your pay request because you didn't get, sometimes 2 weeks worth of work done. Mm-hmm. So it impacted your cash flow for that period of time.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. Well, let's get into our topic then. We're talking about contracts because that's obviously where we need to start, because if we don't have a good contract, I assume we're going to be sitting in your office at some point with some Correct. Kind of dispute. But before we get into that, just a little CYA, I know from my standpoint, I'm not an attorney. I'm not giving any advice. I don't know anything about legal business. So I just want to put that out there. And I don't know what your deal is, but I'm sure you're just kind of offering your opinion and so forth also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I can't speak to the laws in any other state other than Florida where I'm licensed. So while they're very similar, definitely want to talk to your own lawyer before you make any decisions based solely on this podcast.
That is great advice. Well, let's get into contracts. So because everything starts there, what kind of problems do you see? Why are people in your office? It's really, how can we avoid a lot of these problems that you're seeing? Now, our audience, our listeners, we've got a wide range of contractors. We've got some guys, smaller contractors that do residential. We've got up to huge contractors and around the world. So we've got a real spread on that. So I think if we can kind of keep it general, we'll give a little something to everybody. Does that sound good?
No problem.
Great. Okay. Well, let's get into the contract.
I'll tell you about two things that sound incredibly obvious that are the two biggest problems that we see, meaning the worst case scenarios that come into my office usually fall into one or the other of these categories. So number one, and again, I apologize if this sounds obvious, but trust me when I tell you, I see it all the time. Have a written agreement. There are many people that still come to my office and they have no written contract. None. We have a client that came to us. He's owed $800,000 on a $4 million contract. And when I said, can I have a copy of your contract? He is a sub, by the way. He says, well, I have it. I sent it to the other guy and we started the work and we never actually got a fully executed contract. So for you to think that, well, that's only the small guy, the guy in the truck with a helper. So number one, have an agreement that's in writing. Mm-hmm. Number two, if there is an agreement and it is in writing, read it. And again, I know this sounds obvious. I had a client come into my office about a month ago and, he set up a meeting. He came in and he said, Alex, I need you to review this contract for me. I start to flip through it. I get to the last page and it's fully executed. And I said, Maury, what do you want me to do with this? It's a fully signed contract. I can't do anything with it now. He said, okay, next time I'll bring it to you before I sign it. Right. And I asked him why. I said, well, did you at least read it? He said, well, no, that's why I was coming to you. So get an agreement in writing. If you have an agreement in writing, make sure you read it. What we see a lot of our clients do is they look at the first page and they see the price and the time. Mm-hmm. They skip to the scope. They work hard. This is included. This is excluded. And then if they could get those three things, time, price, scope, to their liking, the 16 pages of legal boilerplate, right, they almost invariably skip over. And that's where a lot of the pain comes in. And we could talk about a handful of provisions that I typically see in the contracts, but you got to read it all so that you understand it, so that you're not at least surprised if something were to happen and someone points at a provision that you didn't even know existed in your contract.
Right. Now, if you're using somebody else's contract and they bring it to you, whether it's a general, there's got to be some stuff in there that is not in your interest. And I always think that you, on those contracts, I'm sure we can send it over to you. You take a quick look at it, highlight anything that, hey, you got to get this thing out of there. It's going to save you a lot of time and a lot of pain, as you say, at the end of the job.
Yeah, and people perceive incorrectly two things on why they don't send contracts to lawyers, and it's a big mistake. Number one, they think it's going to cost too much. I would tell you, on average, most construction lawyers will charge between $500 and $2,000 to review and provide an addendum to a construction contract. You know, that's, you know, sometimes it's a lot more because maybe it's a 200-page contract. But your average contract, you know, that's give or take a rough estimate of what it costs to review. So if you're signing a $200,000 contract, you know, spending $1,500 to at least understand the terms, probably a good investment. Number two, they perceive incorrectly that, well, if I change this comma to a semicolon, I'm not going to get the job. So I can't change anything, so it doesn't matter anyways. And I'm here to tell you that is not the case, especially in this market. You know, maybe 10 years ago, that was different. But today, you know, you have a lot more clout than you think in making changes to the agreement, especially if your changes are reasonable. Mm-hmm. The contractors and owners, they will listen to you. Now, we typically provide clients with a proposed addendum when they give us a contract to review. And we tell them, you know, if there's however many changes we propose, if they could get between 20 and 30% of our changes in, they've done a good job. So it's not like you're going to get all your changes, but you know, you have changes that you're willing to not make in exchange for the changes that become really important. So, for example, some of the changes that are really important are pay when paid provisions. You know, depending on your state, right, pay when paid provisions are valid and enforceable and can be a big problem. So the idea that if you sign a contract with a GC and that GC says, well, I'm not going to pay you until I've been paid by the owner, that can be a big dent in your cash flow. And it's enforceable in many states, yeah. Well, meaning that the contractor's not in breach of the contract, mm-hmm, because they haven't paid you because they haven't been paid.
A lot of these contracts are, you know, years old, and they don't even know what's in it. So my experience has been, if you present something that's reasonable and say, hey, this is something that's just not going to work, it doesn't sound reasonable for either one of us, let's take it out. We've had some pretty good success on that. But if you're going to sign something, I mean, it's up to you. But at least you're aware of what it is that you're signing. And if you want to take on that risk, that's fine. But you've got to have these things read by a professional and know what you're signing.
Yeah, let me give you, you know, I like to try to give actionable tips, you know, things that people can actually apply. So, you know, what we typically see is pay when paid provisions with respect to subcontracts, right? So contractors have pay when paid provisions in their subcontracts. They also have a provision that requires that the sub work even if there's a dispute, meaning if I'm not paying you as the GC and it's because we have a dispute over change order work or I haven't been funded by the owner, that you can invoke your dispute resolution rights, which may be mediation or arbitration or litigation, but you cannot stop working. Well, that's a problem, right? Think about it. If you're a sub, you have to keep working. You got to keep paying payroll. You got to keep delivering materials to the job site. You're not getting paid. And now you got to hire a lawyer to deal with the dispute resolution process, which could take 1, 2, 3, 4 months. I mean, it's a killer. So what we recommend clients put in is what's called a stop work provision. And most contractors are willing to include it. And to the extent this is a provision that exists in your a contract with the owner, that they say you have to keep working if there's a dispute, having a stop work provision is very important, which means the parties agree that if I'm not getting paid for any reason, that I have the right to stop work. Many of our clients believe incorrectly that they have that inherent right. Mm-hmm. And that's not true in many sophisticated construction contracts. So having the right to stop work. So you may not get paid, right? Because maybe there's a pay when paid, but at least you can stop the bleeding.
Right.
Exactly. Right. You don't have to keep funding the job, financing the job. You can stop. So usually it's, you know, whether it's after 15 days of non-payment, 30 days of non-payment, the important thing is that there's some point where you get to stop.
Right.
And you don't have to keep funding the job.
What do you think about the AIA document?
It's a nice place to start. Generally speaking, if you are a subcontractor and a contractor gives you his or her form of construction contract, much more likely than not, the AIA contract is probably better for you out of the box with no changes than the contract that the GC hands you.
Right.
Same is true for sophisticated owners that have their own contract. You know, it's a good contract to start. And if there was a standoff and no one could agree to anything and everyone just said, well, let's take the AIA unmodified and go with that, you know, it's at least fair both parties in the deal versus many contracts that are one-sided. Mm-hmm. But what you have to be careful with is that someone that gives you an AIA, you have to make sure that it is not modified.
Right.
You know, using the AIA software or website, it'll highlight changes, but there are ways to do it so that those changes are not identified. We've had clients that have been presented what they have been told was an AIA contract, only for us to redline it against the actual AIA to see that there were changes made to it. So just be aware that can happen.
What do you think about arbitration clauses? Is that something we want to have, or do we want to be able to go to court?
So everyone needs to make this decision independently. The important thing is to make an educated decision. So I'll tell you a story. I personally prefer and think that a more fair outcome is typically garnered from litigation, meaning a court, either a judge or a jury, rather than arbitration, with additional safeguards. And I'll talk about that now. But for example, I had a client who came to us. He was owed about $150,000 on a construction contract. He signed a contract without truly reading or understanding all the details, and it required that any dispute be arbitrated with three arbitrators. Well, arbitration is expensive. Arbitrators charge just like lawyers charge, by the hour, and they're not stupid. They get their money up front. So we had to pay the arbitration fee to the American Arbitration Association, the AAA. That was several thousand dollars. So my guy's owed six figures, and now he's got to spend money on me. He's got to spend money to start the arbitration. We have the preliminary hearing and determine that with three arbitrators, we're going to need three full days of arbitration plus a little extra time here and there. The arbitrators wanted $30,000. For their fee. So my guy's thinking, this is insane. I'm owed this money and I'm writing tens of thousands of dollars worth of checks just to get paid. And I said, this is what you agreed to when you signed this contract. So be aware that there's a cost to arbitration. There's a very limited appeal, right? So the arbitrators don't have to follow the law. They can make a decision based on what they think is fair or right, even if that is contrary to the current state of the law in your state, and that's not a reason by itself to overturn the arbitration award. You just have to be aware of that. Now, generally, it's faster. I'm in the middle of an arbitration now for a $102,000 collection case for a construction client. We're going to start and finish this arbitration in a day, and it'll be done. We just had the hearing this morning. The arbitration is going to happen right after Thanksgiving. If we went to court, we wouldn't have the outcome of this arbitration until the middle of next year. So there is a speed advantage to arbitration. So, you know, you have to weigh those things and make a decision. My personal preference is that when you put it all together, generally speaking, for most people, a court is probably the the better solution.
That's what I found too. I agree. Well, I'm getting that knot in my stomach that I get every time I talk to an attorney and listen to all these things, because being a roofing contractor for 30 years, I've been in a lot of litigation, and you really want to try to avoid that by doing the work up front, as we've been talking about here. Well, let's get into change orders, because here's an area that can really screw up a contractor, and something that, you know, just eats into job profits and creates all kinds of problems. What can you tell us there? I got to imagine you see contractors in fighting about change orders.
Oh, I would have, I don't know, maybe half as much work in my office if people were not fighting over changes in the construction contract. So the best thing I can tell you is that where the least amount of disputes occur is where the change order process is well defined in the construction contract.
Exactly.
The better it's defined, the less likely there is a dispute, and the more that exclusions and assumptions or carve outs in scope exist, the less likely there is a dispute with respect to changes. So, you know, most owners and contractors, when it comes to roofers or any sub or trade contractor, they want to make sure that everything's included in the price. And as a result, they push back on changes aggressively. So you need to know that that's going to happen and include in your contract. And by the way, this is not just the proposal, right? So this is another mistake we see clients make, right? They get an invitation to bid, they generate their proposal, it has all of their exclusions and assumptions, and then it comes time to sign the contract, and that proposal is nowhere to be found. The only thing that exists is the contractor's scope of work and the price and the schedule, and then all of the contractor's boilerplate. So all of your assumptions and exclusions, they've disappeared. You need to make sure those go back into the actual document that gets executed as the contract, because that's what's important. So the more you can define those issues and those things are not, that are not in your scope and not in your price, the less likely you are to have a change order problem. Because if you put it in the contract, guess what that means? That means you're going to have to talk about it at the time of contract rather than one party assuming that it's in the contract and the other party thinking that it's not. So the more time you spend, I'll tell you a story. We have a client who's been in business for about 35 years. And if you read his contract, it's this disjointed list of issues. And I said, we need to tweak your contract. And he said, well, let me tell you the story. I think he's got like 37 items numbered lines in his contract, and he says every one of these is a problem that I had on a job. I can tell you the story behind every one of these. So every time I got burned, I added a sentence to my contract. So that's what he would do. So he made his list of issues and exclusions every time he got screwed. So I guarantee you, your listeners can make a list of all the things that come up on lots of jobs that they should memorialize and have that as kind of their standard exclusions. You know, our price doesn't include this, 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 and this. We're not going to show up on these days. You know, we're not paying for the permit. You know, we're not going to provide our own hoisting. You're going to provide us utilities. Whatever those issues are, write them down and put them in the contract and negotiate them up front.
I agree. And it really comes down to just communication and dealing with these things. Contractors seem to be reluctant to bring up, you know, the uncomfortable things that have to be addressed. And this is going to some of the residential contractors out there, is when you're dealing with Mrs. Jones or whatever, you're probably going to run into problems. You're going to tear that old roof off. There's going to be some rotted decking. The time to deal with that is up front, because the majority of homeowners think that everything's included and they're not going to be hit with change orders. If you don't get the money for this change, and that's why most contractors just end up having to do the work and it just eats into profits, or they wait till the end of the job and say, oh, by the way, we did this extra work. You know, here's an invoice for another $1,000. Well, he ain't going to get that money at that point. You got to do it up front. And that's just a matter of communication and addressing these problems up front.
I agree. I could not agree more if contractors just grab the bull by the horns, deal with the uncomfortable situation, because delaying it is only going to make it worse. It's not going to make it go away. So, you know, if you've pull off the roof and you got a whole bunch of rotten decking, you know, call the owner out. Let's stop the work. Let's cover it up. Let's have a meeting on the roof, show you the roof so you can see it yourself. You know, and much more often than not, that ameliorates the problem completely. The homeowner says, well, I guess I got to do it. I don't have a choice.
Yep.
Right? I mean, you're showing it to me. You know, it's like when the mechanic is fixing your car and they bring out the broken crankshaft and right. What do you want to do? Well, I guess I got to fix it, you know, versus telling you afterwards that they had spent another $2,000 fixing an item that you didn't even know that needed to be fixed.
Right. Now, I assume you prefer to see signed change orders that describe exactly what it is and you have a set cost.
It avoids convenient memory. So the best practice, especially for residential contractors, but all contractors, would be that you would have a list of unit costs in your contract. So you know that, you know, every square yard or however you want to do it of the items that would come up on a regular basis, this is what we're going to charge. So that's defined in the contract so that it's not an unknown. So that's number one. Number two, you define the process that you're going to use in the contract, right? So if we run into situations that are unforeseen because they're not visible or they weren't disclosed to us, you know, that may result in a change order, and you agree to execute those change orders to the extent that you need to. Then you run into the problem, then you give them notice before you do the work. This is the key. Right. You got to do it before you do the work. And you show them, take pictures, meet with them, have them sign a formal change order before you do the work. If negotiation 101, you know, you want to do something when you have the most leverage to do it. Well, guess when you have the most leverage to do it? You have it when, before you do the work, before you've incurred the cost, that's when you want to deal with the problem. Have them sign the change order. Negotiate it on the spot. If you have unit costs in your contract, then it's just a math formula. It becomes much harder for the owner to object because they've agreed to the unit costs. We're taking unit cost times area. This is how much it's going to cost. And then you get them to sign it, and then you continue. The problems we see in litigation are when the work commences based on a text message. Yes, proceed. Or some verbal communication, or notice to the owner about the problem with no response, and then you go ahead and do the work. Mm-hmm. All of those are prone to disputes, unnecessarily so, because you could just tackle it head on at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, something that I actually see in some contractors' their own contracts is it says right in the contract, their contract, that all change orders will be signed. Well, you got to get them signed then. And very yes. rarely do these guys take the time, you know, particularly in a smaller job in a residential setting, you know, they're at work or whatever, you're going to bang out the job. You just got to keep on going. But at least you've got an email thread where you're talking about this. Here's how much it's going to cost. Do you want us to proceed? You've got something that comes back that you proceed. And the other thing that I tell my contractors is that work is to be billed and is to be paid at that time. You don't wait until the end of the job. that change order is due now, and you want to get a bill out for it.
Yeah, that's fantastic if you can. You know, on residential, that's easier. When you have a direct contract with an owner, right, even if it's commercial, that's easier. When you're working with a GC, definitely much harder. You know, most GC contracts say that assuming we agree to the change order, then, you know, you can then bill it in your next pay rec. As far as the issue that you raised about having it in writing, you know, to the extent you are using your own form of contract as the roofer, you know, I agree with you. I see it too. I'm surprised that they put this obligation on themselves. What they should be doing is they should say that any changes directed by the owner, verbally or in writing, right, constitute a change, right? So if it's your own contract, then loosen the standard so then you're not in breach of your own contract because you didn't get a signed change order.
Read your contract. I mean, some of these guys' contracts are really old. They haven't read them. They don't know what they say. And correct, they're just some boilerplate. But all right. So now we've got our contract. We've got our change orders. Let's talk about liens and how we're going to collect our money. Give me what is a lien? And as a contractor, why is it important to me?
It should be front and center for every contractor to understand the lien law in their state, to have a relationship with a notice to owner company that can handle their notices. We strongly recommend a company that does national notices. The name of that company is Sunray Notice. It's run by a very dynamic woman. Her name is Ariella. And she does notices for contractors, subcontractors, roofers, plumbers, electricians all over the country. She knows all the rules in every state. Her team of folks is top notch. And you need a service like this to protect your rights. So what is a lien? A lien is the right to a security interest in the property that you are improving based upon your actual improvement of the property, which gives you the right in most states to sell that property and recover your money from any equity in the property. A corollary to a lien is a bond claim. So in almost every state, there's the right not only to lien, but on certain jobs where the contractor has provided a payment bond, then you can make a claim on that payment bond. So instead of encumbering the property, there's now this financial instrument. It's like insurance, but not exactly. It's a surety bond. And if you have rights, typically if you're a sub or below to a certain level, you may have rights under the contractor's payment bond. But this tool, this right, either a lien or a bond, is absolutely paramount in your ability to get paid. The first people that get paid on construction jobs are those that have properly perfected their lien and bond rights. We represented a developer. This was in kind of the tail end of the recession. And he had a defaulting contractor, and we had 33 liens placed on the property, and we had to deal with them all. And the first thing we did is we looked to see, you know, recording a lien is easy. It's a piece of paper in most states that you bring to the clerk's office and they'll record it. Whether it's valid or not is another story. Right. So we went through these documents and we found that about a third of them were improper because even though the lien was actually recorded, they didn't comply with all of the time frames. Every state's a little different as to the rules and time frames and documents you need to send. But many of them didn't, about a third of them didn't properly perfect their lien rights. So we were able to get rid of about a third of them and not pay them, which represented hundreds of thousands of dollars that my client never had to pay. And it's not like the work wasn't done. The work was done. This was definitely a, you know, exploiting a loophole in the law that if they didn't timely perfect their rights, their recourse is against the contractor who went out of business, but not against the owner on the lien. So if you want to get paid, you need to understand the lien law in your state. You need to work with a notice company like Sunray in your state to serve those notices. And in many states, it typically consists of two things. It's usually some early notice either before or right at the time that you start work, and then a subsequent notice or a lien either when you're owed money or towards the end of the job or when you're done with your work on the job. In Florida specifically, if you're a subcontractor, you need to send a notice to owner within 45 days of your first work, and then record a lien within 90 days of your last work. But again, every state is a little different. If you want to get paid, you need to know these rules as well as you know your contract and your business, because that's what's going to get you paid.
Absolutely. And this is not a matter of – I see so many people that – there are so many contractors getting a situation, you know, they're getting stiffed. Here it is, 2 months later, and they go file a lien. Well, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
As you say, it is technical, and we always had a service that did that too, because you can't stay on top of that. I mean, you know, you're doing so many things, but if you miss that deadline date, you're screwed. You're SOL.
Yes, and what we also see sometimes is contractors that say, well, no, I've been doing business with this guy for years. I don't notice his jobs. He always pays me. Well, he pays you until he doesn't pay you.
Right.
And in many states, if you don't send – it's not that you can send your notice once you're owed money. You have to send it even before you're owed any money. So you need to do it at the outset of a job before you know that you may get stiffed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do it before you get stiffed, then it may be too late once you get stiffed.
Yeah, again, here's something that a lot of contractors are, well, I don't want to piss them off, and I don't
right.
want to send out a lien notice. You're not executing on that lien, but you're crazy if you don't protect your lien rights. And any sophisticated buyer understands that. And you just need to do it. And those that aren't sophisticated, just explain, hey, this is the law. This is what we have to do. It's no big deal unless you
don't
pay
us. By the way, it's not like they're not going to get any notices. As a roofer, your suppliers, they're sending their notice anyways, right? So if you buy from, I don't know, pick some ABC Supply, right, to deliver the materials for your job, well, they're going to notice the job. So it's not like the owner and the contractor aren't going to get notice. They're going to get notice from people further down the chain from you. So why not send your notice too?
Yeah. Well, one last question I've got is, you know, let's take a look. Somebody owes us $5,000 or $10,000 or $2,000 or $5,000. What do we do about that? I mean, we're not going to execute on a lien. We're not going to necessarily take them to court. I guess we've got small claims, but how do we collect a lot of these guys that just aren't paying their bills?
So to some degree, you're almost better off that someone owes you $50,000 than, than lots of people that owe you $3,000. But, you know, we see we have lots of different clients. We have institutional construction clients, supply houses, small mom and shop construction companies. Everyone takes a little different view on how they want to handle their collections. But having done this now for about 20 years, what I would suggest to you is the following. If you have a strong collection process in your office, meaning you have a good contract, you've complied ideally with the contract, you've secured your right to lien the job, so you have that leverage over the owner or a bond claim on the contract, a contractor, that you have your own internal process to try to get paid. People don't like to do this, but some of our most successful clients at collection only send us files when they have wrung the life out of whatever they could do with that file. So they're calling every day, every other day. They're sending emails. They're sending someone to the contractor's office to sit there and wait to pick up a check. Mm-hmm. They resolve disputes promptly, right? So, you know, you damaged this issue. Fine. If you pay me the balance in 5 days, then I'll take the discount. So that's another actionable item that I can tell you. Don't give credits without, especially if you're owed money, don't give credits as part of a resolution of a dispute for final payment without conditioning that credit on payment by a date certain. So if you're owed 10 grand and they want a discount of 2 grand, you know, my advice is probably should just take that discount and move on. Right. But don't just give them a credit of 2 grand. Say, I will accept $8,000 instead of 10,000 if you pay me by August 1st. Right? So now you're only giving up the credit to the extent you get the money. Right. But do as much as you can internally to try to get paid. Accept partial payments but only give releases up to the amount that you're actually getting, right? So sometimes we have clients that call us and say, you know, he owes me 50,000 and he wants to pay me 30. I don't want 30, I want 50. And my advice is take the 30, we'll fight about the 20. So take what you can get, clear all the chips off the table with your own effort, and then make a decision on how you want to pursue it. And have a good working relationship with a construction attorney before you start having disputes so that you can have these conversations with someone that's in the know, right? I mean, we have clients that call us and say, hey, Alex, tell me what you think about this, you know, and they spend 5 minutes on the phone and I'll say, look, you know, you're better off just walking away, or, you know, I would take a discount and be done if you think you can get it. And so that you have someone that you can get their advice on whether or not it's worth pursuing. The last piece of advice that I would give is, you need your winners to pay for your losers. Sometimes we see clients take less than they should on some accounts, sometimes in litigation or right at the cusp of litigation, just to make it go away. But, you know, sometimes you can push more to get more, to recover your legal fees, to get interest, because you're not always going to win. So when you've got a home run and you think you can collect it, you should try to collect it, because invariably you're going to have to walk away from some other debts on your books anyways.
Right. Well, we had a good system that worked pretty well, but we didn't work for general contractors, thank God. And most of our work was negotiated commercial re-roofing and maintenance. So we were in a little stronger position, but this is what we did. And I recommend everybody set up a system that's followed. So you've got procedures and certain trigger points, because first thing is, get a deposit, all right, every time you can. We always wanted to get a deposit. Make sure that you've got the payment schedule laid out and get progress payments so you're not financing these guys' projects. And make sure that the bills get out and make sure they stick with it when that progress payment is due. And what I always found, the way that I think about this is, when you send a bill, they're going to put it in the garbage can, okay? unless it's their utilities or something that has to be paid, it goes in the garbage can, okay? Now, let's say, oh, hey, you know, they haven't paid their bill. Maybe we should give them a call 60 days later. And what they say is, oh, you know, I never received the bill. Okay, why don't you send another one? Well, another 30 days goes by. They got the bill, and sure enough, oh, you know, I was going to pay this, but there's this little problem that I wanted you to take care of. And it's just one thing after another. Now, if that gets that bill, once you start getting out 60, 90 days, the chance of collecting it gets really slim. And that's why these phone calls have to be made. Like you said, you go down there, you make a phone call every day. What we did, make sure that you say, okay, when should I get back to you? When are you going to know? I'm going to do this, and I'm going to schedule this, and I'm going to call, and we're going to follow up and follow up and follow up. But if you let these things go, and this is what's happening now, everybody's so busy that they tend to let these things get too far out, that's when you're going to be down at your office. And it's not necessary if you follow a system. And all you got to do is just get burned one time. And you're talking about the contractor that got burned 37 times. You don't want to do that. You want to avoid that stuff up front. And like what you said, is that you want to establish a relationship before you need it with a good and a construction attorney. It's like a banker, you know, when you need the money, they're not going to give it to you. So you need to establish that relationship up front when you don't have the problem or you don't need the money, because that's what's going to save you so much money, so much effort. You do not want to go down that road of litigation. You don't want to get in these situations, because not only does it cost a fortune, but it just sucks the life out of you. I mean, I hate Correct. Litigation. It's so stressful and it just takes your time. And so much of these things are avoidable up front. And, you know, those are some great tips that you offered us today.
Can I throw in one more, Dave?
Please, please.
So I like your idea about, the constant follow-up. I'm not sure if when you were running your business it was as common as it is today, but accepting electronic payments, credit cards, makes a huge difference. It minimizes the ability for someone to put you off. So even though there's a fee associated with it, I get it. No one likes to pay the 1%, 2%, 3%. But it's better to do that and get what you can and move on than the administrative hassle of continuing to follow up. So I would, we tell some of our clients that can accept, that are in the residential side, get set up to take various payments so that you can avoid excuses about payments. So credit cards, PayPal, Venmo, I mean, anything. Any way that someone can send you money, you should be able to receive that money, even if you only do it once every 6 months. But right. Now you have the option to do it. So when they're on the phone, they can give you a credit card number. You can send them a link so that they do it right on their phone. It's critical.
Totally agree. Well, this is some great stuff. So in establishing this relationship with our construction attorney, that'd be you, Alex, how do we get in touch with you? And what can we do to reach out to you? Now, I reached out to you by LinkedIn plus the podcast, and so that's always a good place is to connect with you on LinkedIn, connect with me on LinkedIn. But how do they get more?
Sure. My email address is Alex, A-L-E-X, at Barthet.com, B as in boy, A-R-T-H-E-T.com. And we post regularly on our blog, which is called The Lien Zone. THELIENZONE.com, theleanzone.com. We've got videos, our weekly podcast, free forms you can download, articles every week. And we're on pretty much every social media platform there is at The Lien Zone, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. On Instagram and on LinkedIn. I'm not sure if you see it on LinkedIn every once in a while, Dave, but I try to post at least one construction fail picture every day. That usually gets people right. Chuckling, you know.
I do like
some
that.
Guy hanging off a ladder or hanging on a roof just with a rope tied to his belt buckle. So you try to lighten it up a little bit from everybody's very serious and busy day.
Yep. Well, I agree. Everybody take a look at the website, subscribe to the podcast, The Lien Zone. It's a short, quick things that it's some great information. But Alex, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate talking to you. You really know your stuff, and we will talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Dave. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, that's it for the show today. I really appreciate everybody listening. Be sure to go to my website at theroofershow.com. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Check out our newsletter. Sign up. Get some great information there. And if you have a chance, I always appreciate it if you leave me a review on iTunes. Just go down to the button and click on it. It'll give you instructions on how to do it. And it really helps out the show, and I'd really appreciate it. So until next week, we'll see you on The Roofer Show.